For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So you'll notice that if you are watching the YouTube version of the podcast, which you could also get in terrestrial form, I have my Carpat sweatshirt on in honor of Sebastian Aho that I was gifted by my friend Trip Tracy, the game analyst, otherwise master of all trades for Hurricanes radio and television. I dug in on last night's game. How are you, sir?
I'm just admiring your use of the word terrestrial.
Well, you're a Harvard man. You use words that I don't understand during the course of the broadcast.
Well, with my initials, with my real name being Emmett, it brings me back to the days of E.T.
That's right. He was on the bike.
He
was on the bike with our extraterrestrial. All right. I actually didn't get really into it in the podcast last night because there were so many other things I wanted to focus on, and I try to keep those at about 30 minutes. Otherwise, sometimes you could get completely lost in the weeds. Let's just start with the disallowed goal, because I think that the NHL does itself a disservice here. It's almost at this point immaterial whether or not I still to this minute believe that it was a good goal that was called off. It's that the NHL does such a poor job of getting the information out, their evidence out for taking the goal away, that everybody should have that. If they decide that the goal is no good, they need to show both broadcasts, yours and Nesson, who had the game local in Boston. They need to show exactly why. And I don't believe we ever got a good enough picture to determine that they should have called the goal off. Am I crazy?
No. On any type of these reviews or coaches' challenges, usually I get an email within the next 10, 15 minutes, but there's not an email that's going to appropriately define their process on this one. In a lot of cases, I'll actually, if in a commercial break, I'll call the review.
Right.
The War Room in Toronto. But the thing that was flabbergasting to me was, you and I talked offline a little bit this morning. I mean, I know the processes inside and out. I mean, I pride myself on the rules and the processes. And the reality is, it's just after a dump-in. So Gislain Hébert, who was the in-zone official, he wasn't positioned on the goal line like, say, he would be on a forecheck
right.
to get there quickly. But he really hustled. And he got there, okay, to, in his view, make a strong determination of a good goal call. So that's important because that's your first step. Because unless they make an announcement before they go to, not a coach's challenge here, of course, a standard review, and they, change the call on the ice, they have to let us know. There's no way they change that. And so then once they go, and I had the same determination that you did, that at the very least, it was inconclusive. At the very least.
Right.
My eyes are starting to go at 50. But I was convinced I saw some separation between the puck and the goal line. And so I thought it was a good goal. But at the very least, it's inconclusive. Therefore, you revert back to the call on the ice, which is good goal. Because by overruling that, essentially what you're saying is, well, Gislain Hébert, you worked your can off to get there, and we are telling you your eyes don't matter. So that's the overall process that was mind-boggling to me. And then, Adam, and you and I were talking offline, you get into a couple of things. If the first couple minutes of good ice conditions, but all the goaltenders rough up their crease.
Right.
There's already a snow buildup, which is going to cause that buildup on the backside of the goal line. I've long thought that they should maybe think about putting in some type of a border to the backside of the goal line that will help them differentiate in close calls like this. You brought up the tennis analogy this
yes.
morning with lasers and whatnot, which I thought was brilliant. And I just sit there and I say, I ended up moving on like you did with, you know, the post-game podcast. But let me tell you something. I would have blown a gasket of gaskets if this was in a playoff series.
Yes.
Because I just think the National Hockey League, yeah, it was a game between two teams, elite teams in the league. But it's the perfect opportunity for them to not make a – bring trouble upon themselves, bring drama upon themselves. Because it really, it's not that big of a game. It's the first couple of minutes. It's regular season. But they weren't able to avoid that.
Tripp Tracy is joining us here. Like, there are two things at work here. The tennis system is a computer. And they can determine with a computer where the tennis ball makes contact with the court. And they can do that with a ball that is traveling 135 miles an hour. And they could not prove to me definitively with a puck at rest that it was across. That makes no sense to me that you couldn't get a computer image of that. Now, the other side of that is the laser thing is, why can't we have a simple laser that would draw the line? Heck, I can put a laser line on a drywall. Why can't we have a laser at the bottom of each post right at the goal line that would simply, when activated, draw the line on the video screen? This would tell us definitively. We have VAR. Now, they get VAR wrong in soccer all the time. But we can draw lines on VAR to determine whether or not somebody is a shoelace offside in soccer. Why can't we have that in hockey?
Good point.
So we should be able to have these two things, but we don't. And to me, if you brought it up, if something like that happens in a playoff game, in a deciding game, in overtime, somebody's going to lose a game or win a game they don't deserve.
If that's in a clinching game and overtime of a playoff series, I'm not available to talk to you right now because I'm having a Dr. Phil. And, you know, because I was able to temper it. But I mean, you know, like it just everything you write is well thought out and right on. And I mean, I just sit there and I say, and Hurricanes fans watching, you know, like that's one where, you know, like I know in some of these reviews, coaches' challenges, it's like a Forrest Gump box of chocolates.
Right.
You don't know what you're going to get because, yes, 10 people, you're not going to have an absolute consensus. But that breakdown was the absolute process without any gray area. And again, at the very least, it's inconclusive. At the very least, I think like you, good goal, and you revert back to the call on the ice. But, you know, get ahead of it here
yeah.
with the technology that you mentioned. Bring MacGyver into the war room if you need to.
He'd solve it with a chewing gum wrapper. MacGyver was always good at that. All right, let me ask you about the quality of the game that the Hurricanes played last night. Because what I spent a lot of time during the podcast, available on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast, Canes Corner Podcast, was that I thought stem to stern, best game they've played all season, given the circumstances, given the opponent, given the venue, given the stakes, given the way they scored their first three goals, which were all born out of hard work more than anything else, heavy forechecking shifts, puck retrievals, all of that. I thought they shut down Marchand and Pastrnak, maybe like they've not been shut down at any point this year. I thought everything pointed to that being their best game.
I totally agree. And I guess the one you hit all the pitches there. I guess I would probably add the physicality that Boston had in the first period
yep.
and how encouraged I am with the way that the Hurricanes You know, there was a time that I questioned if at times they were softer than they needed to be, and they were certainly equal to the task there. I mean, I didn't mind the hit on Kuznetsov. I thought that was a clean shoulder to shoulder hit. I did not like the hit from Marchand on Pesci, but then Pesci goes and challenges him.
Uh-huh.
The linesman won't let him go. But watch Marchand after that. He wanted no part of that Pesci.
Right. Pesci.
But
yeah.
They answered the physical tone in the first period. Everybody on board, like you mentioned. I thought that, that power play, the abbreviated 5-on-3, I didn't – until the end, they really didn't get a lot out of that power play. They could have sagged many a night. We would have said that's where Carolina needed to get in front of the game. That's where they lost the game. They stuck with it. We know what Andre did.
Yep.
And then after McAvoy scored with 3 minutes left in the second period, I thought I was actually happy to see that.
Oh, you said that. Yes.
How they'd react in a hostile environment. You're right, partner. They answered all the questions last night.
It was a tremendous game, and to me, it was the most encouraging way to see Andre, because he brought physicality in the second period, and I thought he might have to stay right now with Staal and Martinuk. For the same reasons we liked Seth Jarvis there, I think it's forcing Andre to play a very simple game, which is something he needs to bring all the time, more physicality and all of that. And I thought that Seth Jarvis on the shorthanded goal, which was, you know, in part created by his two line mates, Jordan Staal winning the faceoff, Jacob Slavin with the hard rim around and all of that, but the persistence of Jarvis, I thought he got rewarded there for the game he had up until that point, which was top-notch. And I was more encouraged going forward by last night than I have been at any point during this season.
Yeah, I can't argue. I mean, gosh, if you wanted me to get nitpicky, I'm still looking for some more from Kuznetsov. But, you know, like, I mean, I go back to after the Boston game last Thursday at home. First of all, you and I spoke about the fact that, you know, with this break, it's a blip. You know, you didn't know what it was going to go one way or the other in extreme fashion, and not to overreact. And obviously they've won three straight since then. But the first of the three wins you and I spoke about, it was time to go hammer down with speaking about getting the guys that you need going offensively, aside from finding these line combinations, which are still work in progress. But Tara Vinen, Svechnikov, who didn't play that game Friday, has played two excellent games since. And Natchez. And Kuznetsov was the other guy, and I'm still looking for growth from him. But, you know, that for me, aside from you hitting the nail squarely on the head about why you liked last night like you did, is now you've had a stretch of games where the guys that really need to have offensive confidence to create offensive layers and not be vulnerable defensively, they put together, it's not a long stretch, but they put together a nice stretch.
I loved everything about last night. Now we got three games left to play. I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of R&R for some of the guys, at least a game off. But we know the top guys don't want to come out of the lineup. It's not about numbers. The top guys just want to play. I will be surprised if any of the top guys take Tuesday off, because now you're risking being out for at least a week. If you don't play Sunday until whenever Carolina starts the playoffs, Saturday, Sunday, or even Monday, that's too long to not be on the ice playing a game. Maybe there's no difference between Tuesday and whenever you start and Sunday and whenever you start, but it could be way too long. Trip Tracy, I will speak to you before then, I promise.
You got it. Can I use just 10-second reaction to what I in that game against Boston, Slavin and Burns were an atypical minus, but I thought Burns really struggled.
Yeah, I agree.
And Burns is a great example of a guy that is so well conditioned that he loves the grind. And so, you know, look at how he played last night versus how he played against Boston at home, coming off that break. So that is, you know, I know he's got the longevity streak of consecutive games.
Right.
But he's one particular guy, and there's several others. You're taking a chance with regards to injuries anytime you put somebody in. But, AG, I think, again, you're right on the mark, because Burns is a great example, and there are others. you need them to play as close to game one as you possibly can.
Yep, they do. That's why I don't think you'll see 20, 24, 59, 88, 92. I don't think 86, who I think Teuvo Teravainen is looking like the real Teuvo Teravainen right now. Love everything about that line, the way he's playing on it. I don't think you'll see Teuvo come out of the lineup. If somebody's got an injury, yeah. But if everybody's healthy and, you know, they don't have to come out, then they won't. I think we will see Scott Morrow and Tony DeAngelo draw back in because it's been too long for Tony, and Scott needs to get his feet wet just in case. And you're not coming out of the lineup, Trip. I will talk to you very soon, my friend. I'll talk to you later.
Hey, have an extraterrestrial rest of the day, my friend.
Thank you very much. I'll just point. I'll point at the moon.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.